Journalism History, a podcast that rips out the pages of your history books to re-examine the stories you thought you knew and the ones you were never told. I'm your host, Terry Finneman, guiding you through our own drafts of history. This episode is sponsored by the Texas Christian University Bob Schieffer College of Communication, where students learn to practice journalism with the persistence, civility, and integrity embodied by legendary CBS News journalist Bob Schieffer. In this episode, Nancy Unger of Santa Clara University discusses a Wisconsin suffragist once called the most consistent supporter of equal rights of all the women of her time, but whose legacy is often overshadowed by her husband's. We've created 5 mini-episodes featuring suffrage researchers who spoke at an American Journalism Historians Conference. This is part 4.
Okay, so I'm Nancy Unger, and this is Legacies of Belle La Follette's Big Tent Campaigns for Women's Suffrage. So when I wrote this biography of Belle La Follette, I had a hard time reconciling what I so admired about her with what I found to be a really frustrating blind spot concerning her approach to promoting women's suffrage. And so my article is an effort to wrestle with that blind spot and its legacy. So on April 26, 1913, Belle Case La Follette testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on Women's Suffrage. She had long argued that women merited the vote based on their service as public housekeepers. Quote, "One fundamental reason for equal suffrage is that it will arouse homemakers of today to a realization that they can only do their part, the part their mothers and grandmothers did, for the home when they use the ballot to secure these standards of cleanliness and healthfulness for the municipal home, which were established in earlier times for the isolated home." And yet, La Follette also cited more democratic reasons, asking, "Are not women people?" And testifying that, quote, "home, society, and government are best when men and women keep together intellectually and spiritually, where they have the widest range of common interests, where they share with each other the solutions to their common problems." She called women's suffrage a simple matter of common sense. This combination of arguments to promote women's suffrage created an inclusive and big tent that would attract a diverse group of supporters in the first 2 decades of the 20th century. People who believed that women were inherently maternal and more moral than men found one set of arguments compelling, while feminists who rejected all claims of women's moral superiority reacted favorably to the other set. For all its wide appeal, however, this uneasy combination also fostered debate over women's essential nature and hindered their rights activism for decades to come. So who was Belle La Follette? Suffragist and leading feminist Alice Paul hailed her as, quote, "the most consistent supporter of equal rights of all the women of her time." Nevertheless, she is far less well-known than her husband, Fighting Bob La Follette, a congressman, governor, and U.S. senator. Note the subtle plug for my book here. She does have her own unique claims to fame, however. She was, for example, the first woman to graduate from the University of Wisconsin Law School. See if you can pick her out. As one of my colleagues points out, she seems to be the only member of the class to have received a diploma. She channeled the bulk of her political energies into her work as a public speaker and journalist to become a key player in the campaigns for women's suffrage. Also a key player in the campaigns for civil rights for African Americans, fearlessly advocating what was way too big a tent for most white Americans, and promoting world peace and disarmament. That's her there, and there's Jane Addams there. Upon her death in 1931, the New York Times hailed her as, quote, "probably the least known yet most influential of all American women who have had to do with public affairs." According to scholar Sarah Egge, suffragists in the Midwest, quote, "recognized the power of paper as an inexpensive means to reach isolated rural voters and planned their political campaigns around small papers with big messages. La Follette's magazine, founded in 1909 and penned primarily by members of the family, was just such a publication. The magazine, published today as The Progressive, offered a mix of homey features, farm news, recipes, fiction, and humor. But it was mainly a forum for progressive political views. The 16-page weekly circulation in its early years was relatively modest, ranging from 30 to 40,000. It gathered a faithful readership, however, especially the home and education feature by Belle La Follette. Exasperated with male editors' certainty that women only wanted to read about fashion and homemaking, La Follette threw down the gauntlet. Let's fool these men publishers and put our time in on the world's events. Hailing La Follette as a pioneer in a new establishment of a new sort of women's page, Cincinnati Enquirer journalist Celine Armstrong Reporter declared, "One of the cleverest and most readable pages in the country is edited by Belle Case La Follette. She was probably the first editor of a woman's department to go on a strike against the conventional formulas for hair dye and accepted recipes for beauty. La Follette is always independent and fearless in her expression of opinion." In countless columns, La Follette argued for women's suffrage on the basis of women's essential nature. Many suffrage leaders urged that women be enfranchised because they were naturally more moral and selfless than men and more dedicated to the greater good. You can see how light the city gets once women get the vote. That is, women deserve the vote because of their sex, not despite it. According to this view, a woman's roles as homemaker and mother were her greatest political credentials. And La Follette agreed, declaring, "Politics is merely public housekeeping." Yet, La Follette also voiced decidedly egalitarian sentiments in her demands for suffrage. She declared in 1912, "Men and women are equally and mutually concerned in government, and it is only when they equally understand and are responsible that we will secure a well-balanced democracy." The landmark case in 1908, Muller v. Oregon, had already revealed the dangers of the gains that had been won for women laundry workers on the basis of their differences from men. The court asserted plainly that women were not equal to men, but like children, were physically weaker and incapable of protecting their own rights, and therefore must rely upon the state to look out for them. And yet La Follette scoffed at concerns about conceding women's inferiority to gain protective legislation. The passage of the 19th Amendment did not resolve the questions concerning inherent and perceived differences between men and women. But La Follette steadfastly refused to conflate protection with privilege or different with inferior. She believed that one could work to remedy problems that plagued women specifically without conceding their inequality. She faced, however, a growing consensus that women could have equal rights or protective legislation, but not both. In La Follette's Big Tent, feminist assertions and essentialist constructions of womanhood included mutually exclusive arguments that frequently divided women and hindered their progress. Women who were confident that it was their maternal feminine nature that qualified them to vote pursued very different agendas than women who believed in women's political, economic, and social equality with men. La Follette had triumphantly reported that, as promised, equal suffrage was helping to bring equal pay for equal work. However, over the course of the next 100 years, many women were protected right out of their jobs by legislation and labor practices designed to shield women, such as arbitrary maximum lifting weights far lower than men's. Using some of the essentialist arguments proffered by suffrage campaigners, including La Follette, many educational opportunities and professions remained essentially closed to women. Until the Equal Credit Opportunity Act of 1974, banks could refuse to issue a credit card to an unmarried woman and could require that a married woman's husband co-sign. Only the Pregnancy Discrimination Act of 1978 ended the practice of firing women when they became pregnant. Marital rape was not recognized until the 1970s and not criminalized in all states until 1993. Equal pay for equal work has yet to be achieved. The feminist movement of the 1960s and 70s showed that the two forces that La Follette gathered together under the big tent had become diametrically opposed. Not only did women repeatedly come into conflict during efforts to pass the ERA, but their differences continue to plague women's unity to the present day. Although the wide-ranging arguments used by Belle La Follette and others helped to make the 19th Amendment a reality, they also reinforced a vast number of differences between the sexes and among women. This polarization is particularly damaging because it allowed some of the most powerful and constructive elements of La Follette's message to be lost. Her insistence that difference is not synonymous with inferiority, especially concerning reproduction and other factors based in physiology, and her support for the sisterhood of all women across race, class, and geographic borders. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and additional thanks to our sponsor, Texas Christian University. Until next time, I'm your host, Terry Fenneman, signing off with the words of Edward R. Murrow. Good night, and good luck.